Welcome to this November 2017 podcast for Sense of Learning. It's our first podcast and we're excited to discuss a topic today that relates to skills assessment, in particular the use of a rubrics assessment for skill proficiency. Rubrics as an assessment tool have been widely critiqued for their value and application during assessment processes, and the use of rubrics within primary and secondary education has been widely discussed, with much of the discussion focusing on written assessment tasks, such as essays. In comparison, the exploration of rubric use in vocational education and training is rather lacking, and the content of this podcast today will relate to competency-based assessments within vocational education and training. However, the principles and features can be applied to any observational assessment of skill. Let's start today by looking at what rubrics assessment tools are and the features that can make them a valuable tool for assessment of skill. Defining the term rubric can be somewhat subjective, as the term is defined in a number of ways. However, there is some degree of commonality in these definitions. Many will define rubrics as a document or matrix that states the expectations or outcomes for a given task and provides a gradation of quality for each criterion. Some describe rubrics as a scoring tool that lays out the specific expectations for an assignment. When a rubrics is developed effectively, it can be a useful tool to guide and evaluate learning. And today we're defining a rubrics as a matrix that provides a trainer with criteria on a graded scale for use in observational skills-based assessments. Now, I'm using the term trainer, but I'm sure you can all relate to the use of that word in terms of trainer and assessor, facilitator, instructor. Observation checklists are often used in competency-based training to assess the demonstration of particular skills. They are lacking and limited, though, to a satisfactory or not yet satisfactory result. So despite these checklists being developed using the performance criteria from units of competence, there's an absent measure of proficiency. This gives a learner minimal, if any, guidance about what level they are required to perform skills at, and a trainer with no opportunity to provide meaningful formative feedback post-practice and assessment. So what are the features of a rubrics then? So rubrics can divide an assignment into its component parts and provide a detailed description of what constitutes acceptable or unacceptable levels of performance. And I think the key here is the use of that term levels of performance, which we'll get into a little later. What are the key features of a rubrics that commentators have already discussed? Well, most of them have identified that there's four distinct features of a rubric, which are task description, scale, dimensions and descriptions of those dimensions. Let's have a look at the task description. In the case of competency-based training and assessment of skill, the task description can be developed using the unit descriptor from a national unit of competence as a starting point. Trainers are then able to further contextualise the unit descriptor to an organisation if necessary, or even a particular task in the case of a generic unit of competence. It may, however, still be a description that's too broad and requires further adaptation. So we can break down the description to a really definite example for the learner. The description could be further refined with the inclusion of specific detail of the individual practical activity. However, it can limit the use then of the rubric to the specific activity rather than measure of skills outlined in the competency. For example, think about it in relation to a competency that deals with the operation of a specific piece of equipment. The unit descriptor will focus on the operation and maintenance of the equipment, but that's without a context. So that can form the task description for the rubric. However, if it's contextualized further, such as the operation of the equipment in a specific workplace context, that will result in the attributes that make a rubric harder to adapt for other scenarios. A general descriptor, whilst contextualized to the skills required, can enable the demonstration and assessment of attributes across a range of scenarios, hence a more adaptable and useful rubric. And I've certainly seen examples of that where a more generic rubric that relates to the specifics of the elements in the performance criteria rather than the specifics of a situation or context can be much more adaptable. So you can have one rubric and then define five or six ways that rubric could be used, or five or six ways you would expect someone to demonstrate that skill. So the operation of a piece of equipment, if we take that in a workplace context, it could be the use of that rubric for demonstration of the use of the equipment in a daytime context, a nighttime context, a weather-dependent context. There are also pre-developed off-the-shelf rubrics tools, but there's conjecture over their use, as some commentators will suggest, that the one-size-fits-all format doesn't provide the contextualization to the task description. So trainers choosing to utilize a pre-constructed rubric need to take into consideration that when adapting an existing rubric, the original purpose of that rubric and assessment may not have suitable features that are adaptable for the use in the way they're wanting. So an off-the-shelf product isn't necessarily a bad thing, but just be aware that you may have to actually make some adaptations. Now, one of the other features is scale, and scale refers to how well or poorly a learner has performed the task described in the task description. And a scale may be used to grade or score a learner, as it provides the benchmarking for the levels of mastery of the task or the gradations of quality. And most of us over our course of schooling would have been familiar with a grading scale of some sort. The language we use in a scale needs to be considered carefully, or whether the scale for scoring ranges merely from an A to an F, and the use of an A to an F scale doesn't provide useful information for competency-based training. It needs to be a meaningful scale for the learner, as it will be useful then for self-assessment and skills assessment. And please don't underestimate the value of learners using a rubric for self-assessment prior to summative skills assessment, and we'll focus on the use of self-assessment in one of our later podcasts. You might choose a scale of exemplary, accomplished, developing, beginning, as it can provide adequate distinction between the levels of mastery used in the scale. Further definitions of these terms to define the scale further will help give learners a better understanding of the scale, and it will also help your trainers and assessors. Commentators have focused on the performance criteria and attributes, then providing the guidance on the levels of mastery, and have somewhat ignored the attributes associated with the scale itself. The application of a scoring scale in parallel with the scale, so beginning to exemplary, may assist in learners' application of the rubric for self-assessment, like I've mentioned, and learners using the rubric to self-evaluate their skills may find that the resulting score can provide an indication of whether they're ready for assessment. Scores below a given number or level could be used to suggest they need further practice prior to an assessment. We will put up an example of what a scoring scale looks like with some descriptors of the exemplary, accomplished, developing and beginning scale levels. Dimensions and descriptions is another key feature, and dimensions may be referred to as the performance criteria. Don't confuse that, because in the case of competency-based training, these performance criteria are articulated in competency standards. However, they can be ambiguous and require contextualization. We're all familiar with that line at the end of a lot of performance criteria, in accordance with organizational requirements. Performance criteria articulated in a rubric identify for both the learner and the trainer the dimensions of the performance that is being taught and assessed. This reflects the theory of constructive alignment, which again we'll explore in one of our later podcasts. How these performance criteria are articulated across grading scales is quite interesting to explore. There are suggestions that the attribute descriptors need to deal with the same performance criteria across the grading scale to ensure they are continuous and consistent across all grading levels. Each of the attributes with each performance criteria need to reflect the same qualities. It is simply the degree to which these qualities change across the grading scale that sets it apart from other levels. And like I said, we'll put up an example to give you an idea of what this might look like and make it a bit clearer. In short, the elements will become the rubric performance criteria, And the performance criteria from the nationally endorsed unit of competence are given then descriptors in the form of attributes for each level of performance. The element might be quite explicit, in which case the performance criteria can simply be mapped to the unit or mapped in the rubric. So the performance criteria from the unit can actually then be mapped. It's the attributes that will provide the assessable behaviours. Given many learners find the interpretation of competency standards, so the components of the elements, performance criteria, critical aspects of evidence, required skills and knowledge, and range statements, they find them difficult to interpret using the element and the performance criteria can somewhat alleviate the issue, and the attributes can be refined versions of the competency performance criteria. So they can be more explicit statements for learners, more explicitly expressed behaviours, that can provide learners with a contextualized unit of competence and a clearer understanding of what they're being assessed against, and of course what's expected of them and how they are expected to perform. There are also considerations for language, and language considerations are another feature of a rubric. In constructing a rubric, your language tone and characteristics need to be consistent across each scale to ensure the rubric remains effective as a learning and assessment tool. Language should be considered carefully when developing descriptions and dimensions, as a trainer should avoid the use of words that form a value judgment. The application of Bloom's taxonomy could assist greatly in the use of appropriate language for each performance descriptor and attribute, allowing learners and instructors to have a clearer, non-judgment-based and more accessible language used in a rubric. We can also use Bloom's to look at what cognitive level you would be expecting, or what level within the cognitive domain you would be expecting a learner to perform at, and then use appropriate language. So today we're focused on the features of a rubrics assessment tool for competency-based training and assessment. This is a multiple-part podcast, and in coming weeks we'll start to explore the types of rubrics that can be used and why it might be better to use a rubric for assessment, and particularly the observational assessment of skills in competency-based training and vocational training and assessment. Thanks for listening to this podcast. It's our first, and we welcome your comments on the features of rubric assessment tools. We'd love to hear from you, especially your experiences developing and using these tools. And we'd love any feedback on whether or not the content of today's podcast has been useful, clear, and whether or not there's anything that hasn't made any sense to you or you'd like us to follow up on. Thanks for listening.